Welcome to This Week in VO with J. Michael Collins. Each week, JMC will host one of the voiceover industry's most interesting personalities for a casual freestyle chat that encompasses more than just business, digging deep into the guest's backstory and pulling back the curtain on how they became the person they are today. And now for this week's guest, Brittany Lambert, hosted by Graham Spicer.
Many voice actors lead a solitary existence, huddled in dark booths at home for hours a day to make a living. How does this self-imposed isolation affect us? I recently spoke with Dr. Brittany Lambert, an assistant professor in the Department of Management and Entrepreneurship at the Kelly School of Business at Indiana University. She's renowned for her work in the area of the gig economy and modern work environments, and the psychological impact that freelance life has on the workforce. So I'm here with Dr. Brittany Lambert, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Management and Entrepreneurship at the Kelly School of Business, and she holds a doctorate in organizational behavior from the University of Colorado and a BS in accounting, okay, from Miami University of Ohio. That's an unusual combination, accounting and psychology. That's great. You're an expert when it comes to people adapting and thriving to the gig economy. Voice actors are one of the original gig workers. We have been working from our home studios. Do you find that people who work from home are generally more or less productive than those people who work in an office environment? So we're not talking about voiceover here, just generally.
It's a great question. And I'm going to put my science hat on first and say that, to my knowledge, this one has not been empirically tested, but we are working on actually testing it. But what we hypothesize, so based on everything I know and my own, I would say, evidence-based practice and practice-based evidence, meaning even from my own experience working at home, we're going in with some hunches that it really depends. It depends on a lot of things, because one of the things we know from our own research and our own experiences is that working from home and being in the gig economy comes with really unique challenges, and that has been very well established. So for example, when you are at home, and particularly when you are a gig economy, you have no boss, no coworkers to report to, no sort of physical holding environment that gives you those boundaries. And so you have what we like to call this radical autonomy, which usually people in organizations want desperately. But when you have that much autonomy, it makes it that much harder to actually structure your work to be productive in a productive cadence. So in that sense, it really depends on the individual and how skilled they are at structuring their own work, or how much they prefer sort of a looser environment. So that's one aspect. And I think the other unique challenge that we really love talking about is just the emotional toll that comes from possibly working alone. And, you know, what we don't know yet is how much those virtual connections are enough for that social interaction. But certainly when you're in isolation, you're more at risk for mental health issues. You don't get the sort of functional resources that come from just having people around. You lack that accountability. And so there are unique challenges to being productive that you have to overcome as a gig worker. And on the other hand, you know, certainly, and I'm sure you can attest to this, there are so many benefits that make working alone, working from your home, that much more productive, meaning I don't have to mess with the conflict that naturally arises when you put any number of humans, imperfect humans, in a room together. I don't get interrupted nearly as much. In fact, that's why I'm working from home today, because I'm avoiding all the little small interactions that you can have. And so there's plenty of evidence to say you can be highly productive. It just means you need to be that much better at managing it, or possibly more intentional.
How important is face-to-face interaction with your peers, and how important is face-to-face interaction with your clients? Yeah. Is there any studies that can make a determination that face-to-face interaction leads to stronger relationships?
And when you say face-to-face, are you talking about being physically in the same room? Physically in the same room. That's a tough one. What I would say is we have this emerging study that I'm really passionate about. One of the things that we worked on is putting people in a virtual space and looking at whether that did improve things like focus. So can we be more productive at the end of the day? Do we feel better? And we're finding that indeed it does. Now, in terms of what we weren't able to do is compare that to actually being physically co-located. But based on what I'm seeing, I would say that people get a lot out of connecting in a virtual space. And that's something, what we were really excited about is the type of tool that we're testing is something that any gig worker can use. So you can gather up friends or like-minded professionals and work on, we used a structured working technique called a Pomodoro. So you can co-work together virtually, or you can just social chat. And what we're finding in that study, and I don't want to leak the results too quickly, is that it is the social aspect. It is working with other people that is so important, even above and beyond how much goal setting or structure you're using. So I would say from that angle, it's critical. I would love to know if it is just as good as being physically co-located. My hunch is that there is something really important that still being in the same presence as other people. But I do think if you structure social connection during your workday virtually, it can be highly effective.
There's a good friend of mine. It's funny that you mentioned this because there's a good friend of mine who has this regular session, two or three times a week, I think it is. There's six or eight of them. None of them work in the same industry, but they all get together on Zoom. They open this Zoom room and they all work independently on their own stuff, but they're all kind of there with each other, even if it is virtually. And she finds it incredibly helpful. So
we're hoping if we can get this published, we'll put some science to her practical experience right on. That's incredible. And I love that they're cross industry because we tried to keep people in a similar industry because we thought that would be a little bit easier in this first run. That's incredible.
So voice actors tend to be, we're creative people generally. We tend to be distracted by squirrels very easily. How do we manage to stay productive and manage our time effectively when we're not really accountable to anybody?
So my best advice here is some of what I've already said, but it needs to be intentional. And I think that's what's so fascinating about gig workers is that you don't have the built-in infrastructure that often comes with being in a traditional organization. And so the pro is you get to build it yourself for what works for you. And the con is that you have to build it yourself. And so when I say infrastructure, it's things like, who are you going to interact with during the day, during the week, that keeps you accountable, keeps you motivated, keeps you plugged into sort of that social fabric? So what do your relationships at work look like? You get to craft those, if you will. And that's something we already talked about is, do you have those accountability groups? Do you have do you use partners, even romantic partners? That's something that we find is that gig workers often lean on not just romantic partners, but sometimes their personal friends as a source of accountability or advice about their work. So how is it that you're building your own relational infrastructure? Are you going to coffee shops to spend time working, just working around other people? And I think, and the second piece would be, what are the techniques you're using, that we know are out there to help give you some structure to your work? Is it a goal setting technique? Is it more of this Pomodoro technique where it's 30 minutes on, 5 minutes off, 30 minutes back on? So what are those sorts of tools that you're employing to help you do that? And I think finally, this last piece, and I'll cite again, this is drawing from a bunch of people's work, but I love this new paper by Brianna Kaza and Ali Meister and Blake Ashworth. And it talks about the physical surroundings of our work. And so I think even, taking a step further, what's the aesthetic of your workplace like? And does it impact the way you work? So I say all this just to say that you have so much freedom in how you build your own infrastructure. And it's very critical that you build an infrastructure to sort of support your work.
one of the big jokes amongst voice actors is, hey, we can get up and go to work in our pajamas. And the
right.
downside of that is, hey, we can get up and go to work in our pajamas. There's this issue of work-life balance. Sometimes voice actors err too much on one side and they aren't focused enough and they aren't achieving what they need to achieve on a daily basis. But there's a lot of voice actors that are on the other side of that equation in that there's no boundaries. They work from 6 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. And yeah. especially now that voice acting is global because yeah. we can work in Toronto and be doing a live job for someone in London or in Bangkok.
Right.
What kind of tools do you suggest that voice actors use to maintain a work-life balance?
Oh man. Well, I'm going to give you this one, and it's not, so I have another one that addresses burnout. So when I hear you talking about working all the time, you know, I know for me, it's like, I get to a burnout space quickly, but let me give you the tool I use and the tool that's drawn from. It's drawn from clinical psychology. Her name's Dr. Natasha Hunzen. She did not invent the tool by any means, but she's a collaborator of mine. And I love going to clinical psychologists because they have all these tools to help with some of the toughest challenges that have a lot more to do with our psyche and how we manage things that, you know, necessarily don't have boundaries, and they're tested over decades. And so that's what I do. So the tool is this, and what I like to ask myself anytime I'm thinking about how I structure my work or how much more work I take on is I call it values-based decision-making. We can get into values, but I think anytime you're trying to deal with that overlap or taking on that next project, the best thing to do and the evidence-based thing to do, this is the way that it's done, is you ask yourself, am I moving in the direction of my values? Meaning for me, if somebody asks me to take on one more administrative thing to help plan a conference, I'm going to ask myself, is this going to, one of my values is growth. Like, am I going to grow in any way if I do this? And one of my other values is feeling connected, like to my place, to the people. And what I'm going to find quickly is that taking that on that conference is going to burn me out because I don't like logistics and I'm not going to gain any new skills. And so what I really recommend is that you take a pause and really think about, is my work and my life aligned with my values? And what are the steps I can take to move things in line with my values? And so if it's overworking in this period, great. If that's what is for you, like, okay. But I think more often than not, we can get caught in systems that tell us to do things that actually take us outside our values and we end up getting burnt out. So that would be my approach. And I think what science would say would be a good way to help step back and evaluate, is this in line with my values?
You mentioned just a moment or two ago about the importance of our work environment. And I assume that's even more important when working from home as it is working in an office. What are the best practices that we can follow to maintain a healthy and maybe even a better ergonomic workspace?
So this is a great question. And I think we're going to have some sort of reckoning with physical places. I'm particularly passionate about it at this point. And it's been written about by three authors. I think I gave you their names, Blake Ashworth, Brianna Kaza, Ali Meister, all professors in management. And one of the things that they find in this piece is there's a couple things to think about when you're talking about place, in particularly physical place. So one would be functional. So looking at, you know, as you say, what are the aesthetic or even sensory parts of our environment that help facilitate our work? And that's going to be sort of a personal question. So I love when I've seen them give a talk on this, they'll flash up different work environments. So for me, I work best in warm, sort of cozy environments. And so I have plants all through my office. I just talked to you about values. My values are in my office. So they're things that help me function in my work to not only be productive, but to be able to connect to the meaning of my work. And so that's critically important. This other piece that I love that they talk about is that we often in our office spaces have temporal markers, meaning things that establish where we're going, where we have been, what we've accomplished. And so I do a lot of that too. For me, it's I'm in a system of academia that if you let it, will tell you that you're not enough and you need to do more. And so for me, what I always try to do is have those markers that remind me of like, no, I'm moving in the direction of my values. Here's what I've accomplished and here's where I'm going. And really being able to do a check-in to make sure I feel very grounded in my own work. And it's been really, really helpful. It's been really helpful. So it's a great question. I'm glad you're thinking about it.
How do voice actors who are grinding it out every day in their home studios stay engaged? How is it that we can best self-motivate in order to continue to not just succeed and maintain our spot, but to in the hierarchy of voice actors, but to grow?
For me, what I'm teaching my MBA students right now is going back to this values-based framework, that the work, particularly because you have so much radical autonomy. And the reason I'm using this in with my MBA students is because they're emerging leaders, which it can also often be isolating at the top. And so the work, in my opinion, has to start with you. And you have to do the hard work of figuring out what is actually meaningful to you versus what is going to be a little bit harder for you to motivate or maybe less meaningful. And so the reason I say that is because I think, like, particularly as gig workers, there are going to be some things I'm sure you have to do. Probably got to find your own health insurance, got to do your own taxes. And so whatever you need to do to get that done, whether it's a Pomodoro exercise or it's like 30 minutes of my taxes, 15 minutes of my favorite TV show, going to knock this out. But these other things, like really crafting your job so that you're spending your time on the things that are most meaningful, I think is really important. And what I think, my hunch, based on these 15 interviews I did and coaching sessions, is that a lot of times people don't actually know what is most meaningful, or they don't know how to communicate it. And doing that work is critically important. And I would recommend, there's a couple things online. You can find them. It's called a value sort exercise. I do it once a year. And again, it's this idea of values are a language that helps us communicate what is most important to us. And they give me sort of a compass of where I'm headed. Anytime I'm trying to evaluate what part of my work is most meaningful, all of my work on mental health is super meaningful because it helps people connect. It helps people thrive. And so I can get behind that. That is no problem for me to pursue projects like that. So that's what I would recommend from my angle of do the work to find out what is most meaningful to you. Figure out how to craft your job to move towards those things in a big way. And all the other things that you have to get done, like for me, all the administrative things like turning in receipts, which I hate, it's weird, but I hate doing it. Do those structured techniques that, you know, all right, 30 minutes on, I'm going to figure this receipt out, 5 minutes off, 30 minutes on, something like that.
Are there specific psychological or emotional signs that we should be aware of and looking for to ensure that we're okay and that we're moving forward in a positive way, emotionally and psychologically?
Yeah, part of that is a really personal question, but I'm going to give you the one thing that I would be on the lookout for that might tell you that you need to engage a little bit and get support. And that could range from, I'm a huge proponent of psychotherapy, but just having a conversation with a friend. And so I label this rumination. This comes from the huge evidence base in clinical psych and even in management science. Rumination is when we have thoughts that tend to cycle, and they're thoughts that are highly negative, often about ourselves. Okay, so it's, for example, it would be like, I didn't get this analysis done today. Oh, that must mean I'm not good at this project. I'm probably not good at my job. That means I'm going to lose my job. Ah, like I might, you know, not be able to pay rent next month. I'm just a failure. Okay. This is an example of rumination where, and also generalizing to a point that I just didn't get my analysis done to all of a sudden, you know, I'm out on the street because I can't have a job. And so what we know about rumination is that the more it happens, and also what we know is that women tend to exhibit patterns of rumination more than men. So be on the lookout for that. But rumination is highly tied to symptoms of anxiety and depression, which again, feeling anxious or a little depressed is a completely natural part of life, feeling a little sad, feeling a little worried. But it's when we start to feel that in a more chronic, persistent way that it can really start to disrupt our thriving. And rumination is often one of the places that starts in. And so what I encourage is that when you find yourself having those negative automatic thoughts and they turn into a cycle of repetitive thinking, there are exercises you can do. And I'm happy to share that, but really try to catch those thoughts.
It's, I think, pretty widely accepted that COVID really accelerated this trend towards remote workplaces. Now, employees have gotten used to working from home. They've discovered that they like it, and they are resistant of going back into office environments. Do you think we're going to see a continuing trend towards people working from home and making job decisions, making choices as to who they're going to work for based on whether they're going to be allowed to work from home or not?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this is based on a lot of things that I've read. I don't know that we've got so I'm saying this is my own practice-based evidence. This is not science-backed, but my personal opinion here is that yes, I think it's going to be really important. And I think that the companies that I've just read too much, like companies are going to have to be flexible. Now, what I also believe is that I don't think we're going to go to a fully virtual world. I think if anything, even just speaking in from higher education, certainly having online offerings, like our online MBA program at IU is number one, I think, in the world or country right now. It's critical to invest in programs that give people that flexibility. But for my undergraduates, for example, and even our full-time MBA programs, being together, being co-located, at least for higher education, is critically important. And I think what I've seen, even in reading articles about different businesses, is people want to be in the office like 2 to 3 times. And I even look at my own sort of schedule. It's that sort of 2 to 3 times, but having flexibility to be out of the office. And I think it's important. And I think that's where we're at. I think it's here to stay. And so now the grand challenge is going to be, how do you establish and maintain your really strong culture that you used to be able to facilitate? I went to tour a whole bunch of different businesses with my undergraduates in Chicago last year. And one of the things that their managers and talent managers talked about is how difficult it is to get people in the office. And for me, when I worked at Deloitte, that was one of the amazing parts about being at that firm, is we had a brilliant office culture. And we knew when everybody was going to be in, and we would all go in together and we would do really fun things and we would reconnect. So we might be at our client site all day or all week, and then we reconnect on Fridays. And what's happening is they're having to work real hard to get people in the office. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. And I think you're dead on that this is going to be something that's going to unfold, and that you all are ahead of the game on, because gig workers have been doing this forever. And people in organizations, this is going to be really new.
Just on a bit of a related subject, the voice acting community is really big on conferences. And I think that one of the reasons why conferences amongst voice actors are so vitally important has got little to do with the learning that happens at these conferences. Even though there's great content and a lot of learning goes on, it's just knowing that we're all in this together and that there really is a community here. And there's that person that I've spoken to, you know, 27 times on Zoom and I've never met in person.
Yeah.
So the conferences are important to voice actors, because I just think it goes a long ways towards eliminating that sense of isolation that we live with every day.
I think that's brilliantly said.
And voice actors actually are even worse off than a lot of other remote workers, because not only do we work from home, but we tend to work from home in very small, dark booths. One light and a microphone. We don't even have a window to look and see whether it's raining out or not.
You know, I didn't realize that. And that is fascinating. And that's a requirement where you've got to be in a dark booth to be able to do your work.
It doesn't have to be dark, but they usually are.
Really? Why is that?
Because they're small enclosed booths, windows are not good in these booths because glass is a reflective surface which bounces the sound energy out of our mouths back into the microphones, which leads to echo. So the booths tend to have dark foam or dark panels on the walls, and they might have a couple of LED lights, but that's about it.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
I have questions for you, but I won't tell me. I'm so fascinated by that. I didn't realize that.
Absolutely. Are there any specific resources that you can point voice actors to that might help them as they are navigating this ongoing issue of working in isolation from home? Are there specific books that you can suggest? You talked about the Pomodoro technique, which I'm aware of. Are there specific websites that perhaps we can direct people to?
So my team has a website that I really like. It's called The Gig Work Life, and you can connect with us via that website. And we post a lot of anything that would be from our science community. It would be up in that realm. So that is a resource that we put together for gig workers. We could direct them there. That would be great.
Brittany, this has been really interesting. I appreciate the time that you've spent with us today. I'm sure that you're going to get a lot of traction on your website as a result of this, and I'll make sure to publish the website address in the show notes for this episode. If people have thoughts, we can direct them to that website, and I'm sure there's a way to contact your team through the website.
You can give them my email, and they're welcome to contact me directly. So this has been such a pleasure. I love engaging in your world. It's fascinating to have a better window into what voice actors do. So yeah, I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
You have been listening to This Week in VO with J. Michael Collins. Be sure to share the podcast with your friends and colleagues on social media. If you do, JMC might just send you a lobster. Now here's nobody trying to sell you anything, because that's just how we roll. Stay tuned for a new podcast most weeks throughout the year.